We all have songs we like, and most of us have songs we consider classics. No matter what's going on around us, if we hear it, we turn up the volume and just stop and listen. But why is that? What makes a piece of music great? Rob Capello tries to answer those questions. He's a composer, conductor, author, and commentator, and host of the series What Makes It Great. He's in town this week and came by our studios with keyboard in tow, and I started by asking him, how does he objectively define what's great?
Well, more than what makes it great, what I try to get people to hear is all the things that they would normally miss. You know, music goes by so fast, and there's such fantastic details in the music going by. So a lot of really what the program is listen to this, notice this. So we'll slow something down, I'll play a worse version, change the rhythm, change the harmony, and thereby help people hear things that they otherwise would have missed.
And what do people get out of that, hearing maybe how it could have been or why how it is important?
Well, what it does is it gets you to notice what's really right in front of your nose. I mean, let's take a favorite song that everybody knows. I mean, everyone in the world has known Over the Rainbow since the moment they were born by heart. In fact, none of us can probably even remember a time when we didn't know it by heart. But in fact, it's absolutely a masterful song. So it starts off like this. Everyone knows this music. Now, this opening leap on somewhere, interestingly enough, the first word choices were someday, I'll go over. Then he tried, I'll go over the rim. But finally, he found somewhere. Now, this is a huge leap for a musical theater song, a full octave. In fact, producers thought we shouldn't use this song in the movie because no one will be able to sing it. It's too hard. It's too big a leap. But it's not just a big leap musically. It's a leap between two different parts of the voice, a low voice, hear some, then this high, beautiful voice. But it's also a leap between two different worlds. This low note is Dorothy's troubled reality. It's aridity. It's no flowers. It's the black and white at the beginning of the film. It's Kansas. This note is where she wants to get to. It's Oz. It's Over the Rainbow. It's lighter and more ethereal. Those two notes, Kansas and Oz, are actually the key to a song in a way you won't understand until the last note. There's only two ideas in the song. I call this leap. The other idea I call circle and yearn, because it starts on a note, circles back to it, and then yearns.
Oh.
So we've got leap and circle and yearn. Now, there are three leaps in the opening. A big leap, then one on way up, which is lower, smaller, and then the third one lower on there's a. The leaps are getting smaller, like her dreams, which are poignantly contracting.
Huh.
Now, we start off with somewhere. Then we've got our circle and yearn. Now, the leap on ways up could have easily been nice and cheery harmony. Way up high. But, you know, great composers don't set words to music. They set the emotion behind the words. So instead of a cheery way up high, it's somewhere. Listen to all the yearning in the piano part. I mean, that's so beautiful.
A little
sadness
there.
Gip Harbor calls it a song of yearning. It's the harmony underneath. Then there's a could easily have been this. But listen to the one minor chord under there's a. There's a. That dark minor color. Then we finish with two circle and yearns. Circle. Yearn. Circle. Yearn. And we resolve.
When you are looking at songs that you use in your program, do you think that the composer is always meant to do all the things that they do? I mean, was this song intentionally written to have that contrast between the hopes and the dreams and the reality and everything else you just talked about? Or are we sort of projecting?
You mean, am I making this stuff up?
Well, not so much if you're making it up, but like, I mean, are we maybe reading something? Are we reading something that I don't want to say isn't there, but are we maybe giving the composers too much credit?
Well, first of all, as a composer myself, you can never give a composer too much credit. What I would say is the things that I'm pointing out to you in the music are simply the facts of what are there. You know, the way the music descends, the two musical ideas, the way they work, the way the harmony works. Those are simply the facts of the piece, and those are actually in there. What it means is, of course, for all of us to interpret in their own way. But that kind of yearning, I mean, Yip Harburg talked about it. It's a song of yearning. I think a lot of it is embedded. What I'm really trying to focus on is listen to this chord, could have been this chord, and that stuff is all in there.
It's almost like this is the musical equivalent of what a novelist does. You know, they have their story, but then there are sort of the subtle details that maybe the discerning reader will get, and somebody who's just looking for plot might not understand.
Exactly. And that's what I'm trying to do, is essentially be a good reader. There's a wonderful series, a book by Vladimir Nabokov called Lectures on Literature. And he talks about being a good reader. And he says a good reader is someone who has a conversation with a book, who talks back, who folds down the pages, who underlines, asks questions of the book. And that's what we're really doing in these What Makes It Great programs, is having a conversation with a great piece of music, a conversation with a composer, in which all of a sudden all the things that went by that you might have missed suddenly come alive, and a song that you've known all your life suddenly becomes something different.
This strikes me that it's kind of similar to an app, the name of which I don't remember, where you play a song that you like, and then it gives you other songs that you might like based on that, but it tells you sort of why you like that song. Maybe
right.
It's there's a lot of minor chords, or like the bridge is a certain way. It almost sounds like you're the human version of what this app is trying
to do.
Well,
I like that. I'm the human version of an app, but I would like the payment from the app for being the human version. But yeah, I mean, mostly I'm telling you things that are happening to you that you might not be aware of. It really just comes from paying attention, listen closely, listen to that. For example, that minor chord, you know, has gone by, I'm sure. But, you know, once you notice it, once it's pointed out to you, you can't miss it. Circle and Yearn, once you've pointed it out, you just can't miss it ever again. Once you hear it resolving down here, when it finally, the last time, resolves up here, you'll never hear it the same.
Do you find that when you listen to music, especially music maybe that you haven't broken down this way, do you feel like you hear it differently now since you've been doing this program than you did before?
Well, I think it's the same thing. You know, whenever you learn anything and you become expert at something, it sort of changes the way you look at others. I'm sure a great chef, when he goes to a restaurant, has a different experience with some other chef's food than a normal person. It sort of becomes the way you hear. I'm consciously trying to articulate what I've heard so that you can understand it. But the goal is ultimately it just becomes the way you hear.
What kinds of reactions do you get from people who come to your shows? I mean, do they tell you that they hear it differently? In some cases, maybe do they wish they didn't hear it differently because it's a different emotion than maybe they had associated with the song?
Well, I think, you know, the truth is I try not to focus too much on the emotion, but mostly on what's actually in the song and let them. I mean, today, this is irresistible in Over the Rainbow. But, you know, if I'm taking a piece of music, mostly I'm trying to show you, listen to this, listen to this, listen to this. They're free to interpret it. I think what mostly I find is people go, wow, I never knew this much was happening in this music. And it's sort of like just going to an art museum. You know, the real inspiration for What Makes It Great for me actually didn't come from music. When I was an undergraduate, I didn't know that much about art. In a way, I was sort of about art the way a lot of people are, say, about classical music. You know, they know a few pieces, they know what they like, but they're not really that knowledge. That's how I was about art. But then I was going out with a girl who was a painter. So I took this art history class. And the first two classes were just, you know, normal classes in a darkened room, slides. But then we would go to the Yale Art Gallery on Friday, and he would take one painting for an hour. And he would just look at one painting. And I realized I didn't know how to look at a painting. It was really a master class on the difference between looking and seeing. And so for me, that was the inspiration for What Makes It Great being about the difference between hearing and listening.
All right, Rob, thanks a lot for coming in. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Rob Capello is a composer, conductor, author, commentator, and host of What Makes It Great. He'll be doing his show tonight at the Musical Instrument Museum and on Thursday night at the Scottsdale Center for the Performing Arts.